Today's show is sponsored by Datadog, a modern full-stack monitoring platform for cloud infrastructure, applications, and logs. Datadog provides end-to-end visibility into the health and performance of modern applications in the cloud, on-premises, in containers, or wherever they run. Visualize key metrics, set alerts to identify anomalies, and collaborate with your team to troubleshoot and fix issues fast. Try it yourself by starting a free 14-day trial today at bit.ly.com/datadogshirt. Listeners of this podcast will receive that free Datadog shirt. That's bit.ly.com/datadogshirt. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of the Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Angie Jones. She is the Senior Developer Advocate at AppLaTools. How are you?
I'm great, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. I just realized that I talked to you 2 years ago. It's been just about 2 years since our show number 559, where we talked about including automation in your definition of done, and things have changed.
Yes. Wow. 2 years ago, things were a lot different for me. That was probably like my first talk and public appearance around that time. So since then, my career has changed drastically. I'm speaking all over the globe now. I've changed jobs a couple of times. The tech has changed as well. So thanks for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've seen you at OzCon. And, you know, I thought I traveled a lot, but you seem to be somewhere every month. How did you find that balance? Like, you were working at Twitter for a while doing automated testing, but also it seemed like you were somewhere every couple of weeks. It must have been difficult to balance the doing and the talking about doing.
Yes, that's exactly correct. So I would find myself like off in Europe somewhere speaking, and I might do like an 8-hour workshop on test automation somewhere. And then I would be gone so frequently, sometimes even like 3 weeks within a month. So, oh, of course, I needed to do the job that Twitter was paying me for as well. So that required me to go back to my hotel room after that 8-hour workshop and then put in 8 hours doing my Twitter work as well. So it was becoming really draining and really difficult to balance.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes people think that my job is like evangelist, which is a word I don't like, or developer advocate. I'm a community manager at Microsoft and I work on Visual Studio and .NET, but it's not really my job to go out and give talks. And I've never really kind of had that job because I'm always nervous about the balance between the doing and the talking about doing.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, people always ask, what makes the personality type of an advocate or an evangelist? And I've always said that it's just you're overflowing with enthusiasm over your topic, that you just have to give talks. Is that how you work as well?
That's true. And I'm really into helping the greater community. So I find myself not just working within whatever company I'm working for, but also working with test automation engineers everywhere and just trying to help level this field. It's a space where there's a really great demand for test automation engineers, but not a lot of people to fill the roles and fill that demand. So that's where I try to contribute, not just leveling up myself, but helping to level up automation engineers everywhere.
I really like that term, level up. I definitely like dig that. We went and did Thanksgiving a couple days ago, and my parents were complaining about their network or whatever. And I was like, have you heard about mesh networks? And then it was just like, blah, 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 blah. And like, everyone's like, wow, you're really excited about this router. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't understand. You know, I think that people who are into something, whether it be something as simple, like, oh, have you got a backup strategy for your photos? Like, you get excited. Like how, right. It's almost like those people that are like, have you heard the news? You know, and
exactly. You're
out there saying, have you heard the news about automated visual UI testing?
Right, right.
And everyone else is like, okay, that's kind of weird, Angie.
Right. Like, how are you all doing automation over there? What strategies are you using? What tools are you using? Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So now you're at AppLaTools and you all are launching like a university for test automation.
We are Test Automation U.
Okay, so this is testautomationu.com. And then at the time of this podcast, it's just getting started, but you're launching quite a few lessons to start with.
We are. So we have 11 courses that will be available at the start of the new year, New Year's resolution and all that jazz. Mm-hmm. And we have stuff around foundational test automation. We have stuff around test automation for real world problems and looking at how other companies are doing test automation. Everyone always wants to know how other companies are doing things, you know. Mm-hmm. And then we'll, of course, have some things around visual testing as well.
Okay. So visual testing, I'm thinking about this podcast, and I have a website that it has a bunch of tests. I've got unit tests that are like, they're headless because they're invisible, right? They just mm-hmm. check to see if a function works. I've got some integration tests where I kind of add the database in. Mm-hmm. After you and I talked, I got more into Selenium, and I built a Selenium front end.
I saw that, Scott. I was so proud of you.
Yeah, thank you. I felt pretty good about that. Now, I'm not quite to the point where I have it headless, because when I do my unit test, I can see Chrome launch mm-hmm. with like a little warning that says Chrome is being like has puppet strings on it. Mm-hmm. So I need to get into headless browser testing. But visual testing, is that just making sure that this button is the right color?
A little bit more glamorous than that. But yeah, it's a relatively new concept where in addition to your UI functional automation, you also add this visual verification component to this. And what I love about visual validation is that you add it on top of whatever you already have. So if you're working with Selenium or Cypress or whatever, Protractor, you just add this with it, and then you have additional coverage. So my example of this is I was going to Raleigh. I used to live in Raleigh. Probably last time we talked, I was in Raleigh, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And so I was headed back there not too long ago, maybe a month ago, for All Things Open. And I wanted to meet up with a bunch of my friends. So I was going to schedule a dinner reservation at this barbecue joint that I love. So I went on Open Table to schedule the reservation. And on Open Table, there I selected the date, and then it asked me like the time. There were a bunch of selections for the time that I wanted. So when I chose the time that I wanted, there was like a modal that kind of popped up, but it was all misconfigured. So there were like two ugly unaligned buttons in the upper right corner. There was no text that was visible to me. And so I didn't know like what these buttons were for. Now, because I do work in tech, I was able to like inspect this and go into dev tools in Chrome and kind of figure out what they were doing and find the text, which was actually all the way in the upper left, and figure out what was going on. But I was thinking about this from a test automation perspective. Maybe like a year ago, I could have written an automated test for this and it would pass. I'm sure Open Table probably has automated tests for this that mm-hmm. are running in CI and they're passing every day because technically the functionality is there. Those buttons are there, the text is there, but visually it was horrible. It was actually unusable from mm-hmm. a customer's perspective. And so these are the types of bugs that visual validation catches.
Okay. So if I went and wrote some Selenium test that said, you know, grab the button with this text or the button with this class, even if the button was white text on a white background and totally invisible, the test would have passed because it grabbed that
exactly,
button.
Exactly. Exactly. So it exists in the DOM and it's clickable. And so with Selenium and whatever assertion tool you're using, that looks great. Yep. Works okay. Great. Like a charm pass, but in real life, this is unusable.
Okay. But if I've seen, like, for example, if you are on GitHub and you check in like a PNG and change it, they have like a visual diff tool for PNGs mm-hmm. and it'll show you that like a pixel changed or whatever. And it's kind of a nice little diff, the mm-hmm. way that we diff text.
Right.
But if I went and built like a visual diff thing to like say, here's the baseline and here's how it actually ended up looking, one or two pixels off, or even like some weird compression artifacts might give me false positives.
Right. So in Applet tools, they allow for this smart comparison. So they're actually using AI to be able to get around a lot of those types of things and be able to only catch things that our human eye cares about. So even launching the same website on different operating systems or different browsers on the same OS can look a little bit different. Like the fonts can be rendered slightly different, maybe a little larger, or like you said, just a pixel difference that you don't even care about. And so with Applet tools, all of that stuff is ignored and it's only going to flag the things that we care about as humans.
I see. So it's the AI equivalent of close enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. So yeah, the example that you just gave, if I launch it on a Mac or I launch it on a on Windows, it might be a little bit different because of fonts or whatever, but I'm not going to go and flag it as being utterly different because of different fonts or whatever. Like you in our last show we talked about the definition of done. This moves now into the definition of correct. And what is correct visually?
I like that.
You can use that. Okay, so you said that you sit stuff like this AI smart visual differences sits on top of tools that I already have. So I already have some Selenium tests, so I could put visual tests on top. And if I accidentally like regressed or broke something, then I would get a heads up.
Right, exactly. So you couple this with what you have. What I love about it is that it helps me to write less Selenium code as well. So I don't know if you experienced this, but I think we talked about like your page objects. I was like, Scott, you need to have page objects. And here's the page object model design pattern.
I haven't actually done that yet because it was so complicated.
Right. But that's the great thing about this. So some of your functional assertions can be removed as well. For example, let's say that you had something in your shopping cart that you wanted to assert against. Well, it's one thing to make sure the thing is there, but the subtotal right? Is the total price right? Is the name right? Is the thumbnail right? All of these things. And you probably wouldn't add all of those assertions functionally because a lot of us are just lazy like that. But with the visual validation, you can essentially just say, this is what my cart should look like. And you get all of those assertions for free, which means less code to maintain.
Okay. So let me think. I finally figured this out then. I could look at it myself on screen and then write 20, 30, 40 different DOM specific tests to assert all the things that I care about. But what I really want is a smoke test that my eyeballs can do. Why am I writing 30 tests, 20 tests to do what my eyeballs can do
Bingo,
for me.
That's it,
now
Scott.
We're doing AI, and that is my new eyeballs. It's my computer vision eyeballs. I dig that. That's pretty cool. First, a word about NetApp. NetApp gives developers common tools across any environment and any cloud. But more than that, NetApp lets developers take care of their own infrastructure with a new service developed with Microsoft for the Azure portal. Azure NetApp Files is the only Azure offering that lets you move Linux, SAP, and other enterprise file share workloads to the cloud in minutes. Register today and learn how you can get Azure NetApp Files for yourself at netapp.com/Azure Preview. That's netapp.com/Azure Preview. So you're doing a lot of speaking and talking about stuff like this. How do you stay frosty? You know what I mean? Like, how do you stay up on this? If you're out talking about how excited you are about, you know, visual testing, what about things that happen in the testing community that you might miss out on?
Right. That was a really important consideration for me when I went from my automation engineer role at Twitter to this now developer advocate role at Applet Tools. I didn't want to lose my technical skills, and it was really important to stay abreast of what's going on in test automation in general. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I had really long conversations with Applet Tools before taking this position, and essentially letting them know that my focus is on test automation in general. Mm-hmm. And they are totally cool with that. I've seen them in the community before joining this, so I felt pretty good about their commitment to enhancing the space in general and not just shoving visual validation down everyone's throats. So they do allow the space for me to continue helping people with their projects, also talking about the foundational aspects of test automation in general. How do you build a automation framework? How do you architect this correctly? And so I do a lot of hands-on work helping people that mm-hmm. way. I also do a lot of workshops as well. And my workshops are very hands-on. We're coding for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. And so this is my way of staying technical. Yeah.
One of the other things that I noticed, and I'm curious what you think about this, because again, I work at Microsoft, but also I focus on open source. Are there aspects of Applet tools that are open source? Because I noticed that it integrates with basically everything. There's like GitHub and Jenkins and TeamCity and like on and on. And it's this interesting balance between things that are open source, like Selenium and Jira and... Mm-hmm. But then there are companies that either provide a service like Sauce Labs that are not open source. They're open source as a service. And then there's just open source projects like Protractor and ProtractorTest.org. How do you balance that? Like what's open source, what's not, whether you're pro business or pro open source?
Right. So Applet Tools has done a pretty good job of contributing to the open source space in some way. For example, Selenium, we have contributors that are Applet Tools employees, but they contribute to the Selenium project. And we also, we're a commercial project, but we do allow for open source projects to use our application for free. We really allow everyone to use it for free, you know, up until a certain amount. So everyone gets like a certain amount of validations they can use a month. But for open source projects, we increase that drastically.
Mm-hmm. I'm over here at appletools.com/tutorials. And like not to like gush a little bit, but I usually figured they'd be like, oh, okay, here's like, you know, the JavaScript SDK and the C# SDK. There's like 40 SDKs. It's pretty stupid. I mean, you have to scroll like multiple times. There's so many different things. And I think that's really the strength of open source is even though, like you said, that the product isn't open source, it's sitting on top of so many things and using plugins. You've got the Selenium C# web SDK. You've got the Storybook Angular and like on and on and on. And it does both web and mobile, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
I'm looking, actually, I'm trying to dig into the SDKs. The docs are really actually very good. And you bring in the Applet Tools Selenium stuff as NuGet. I'm a .NET person, so they're NuGet packages, which is exactly what I would have expected them to be. Mm-hmm. Do you get to work on those? Are you writing any of these SDKs or helping with those?
I'm not, but I also always look at these before they go out. Mm-hmm. So this helps me like keep my testing muscles strengthened and make sure to play with them and everything and provide feedback to our development team on, as an automation engineer, here's what I would want. So I become like this in-house customer as well.
That's interesting. That's actually funny that you say that because I'm kind of similar at Microsoft. I feel sometimes like I'm customer zero. I'm constantly trying to flex the application from end to end and make sure that we don't drop something, which is interesting because that makes me then a manual tester.
Yeah.
Where is the role of the manual tester in a world where we have AI testing our UIs visually?
That's a really interesting question, and it's a really hot topic in the testing community right now. So everyone is talking about these tools that are utilizing AI and how they'll be able to help us with our job. And a common question is, will AI replace me as a tester? And most folks are saying, no, not anytime soon. There's so much for you to cover, and these AI tools will just help you. For example, with Applet Tools, we don't even mark a test as failed by default if it's incorrect, right? And so what we're doing is just providing you the results, and it's marked as unresolved initially. And it's for you, the tester, to go in and actually look at that to see, is this really a failure, or has my baseline changed in some way, and make that decision. So I look at just that whole action, and I think that's a lot of what we'll see. I've been doing a lot of talking lately about not just how AI will assist us as testers, but we're looking at products that are employing AI, like Netflix, Twitter, you know, all of these are employing machine learning. And how do we test this type of stuff, right? How do you know if the recommendations you see on your Netflix page are actually correct? So there's a whole avenue there just for testing the machine learning itself.
Interesting. That is a good point. I mean, you can't do anything without a trained model, and ultimately it's the manual tester that makes those kind of decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we'll never be replaced.
Hopefully.
So the testautomationu.com is out. It's getting started. You said that you're starting with 11. You're going to have more in the new year, though. But is this going to become kind of like a Khan Academy for test automation? And will you include people from the community as well to give courses?
Yes. So this was actually a dream come true of mine. So like we discussed, really hectic trying to help the community, but also work a full-time job as an automation engineer somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I would always get questions from community members about courses. Can you do a course? Can you record a course on this and that and the other, right? And I could mm-hmm. never find time for it. Now that I've moved to this developer advocate role, this is my job. Now I get to do this sort of thing as my day work. So AppleTools was kind enough to sponsor this initiative. So it's totally free for users. Mm-hmm. And we will have courses around test automation, like you said, the Khan Academy or the plural site of test automation. And so mm-hmm. we'll have courses there around automation in general and allow people to come and get this content. Now, it's not just me because mm-hmm. I can't cover everything myself. So I have reached out to our industry experts in test automation and have 10 other people on board already who are going to provide courses as well.
Yeah, I'm looking on the online here. There's like a list of different people you've got courses on, like that are really, they don't sound technical. They're actually kind of more philosophical, which is nice. Like the whole team approach to continuous testing. Like how do you get everyone on board for doing continuous testing, like setting a foundation kind of organizationally for successful test automation, which isn't the bits and the bytes of it. It's really the people part.
Exactly. So people come at this from all different levels. Like I mentioned before, there's high demand and not enough trained people. So we're going to have people who are complete newbies who need to understand the foundational principles about test automation before they start dabbling in any code, you know? And there's other people who are doing test automation much differently. So that course about the whole team approach, Lizzie Hawk, she is a great speaker, up and coming speaker, and she doesn't do test automation full time, and neither does anyone else on her team. And so she talks about how everyone kind of pitches in with whatever they're good at, and they figure out test automation together and get something done. So I think that's a really valuable option for a lot of people as well.
I was chatting with someone recently on the show, and we talked about the fear, the inherent fear that we have of our code. And someone said that if you don't have good tests, you're always going to be afraid of your code, and you're going to be afraid of releases in general.
Yes, that is so true. And I think that's why there's such a big demand and a push to have test automation kind of shifted a bit more left. So I've been doing this for a long time. And when I first started, we would write the test and we would just run these things on our machine. And, you know, some of them will pass, some of them won't. You'll triage the failures and you'll give someone a summary maybe in a day or two. That doesn't work anymore. Mm. Now we're in the era of DevOps and continuous this and continuous that. And so we need automation to be running as part of these continuous integration and continuous deployment pipelines. And so they have to be much stronger, much more stable, less flaky. And so there's really a demand for this and to be able to do it right.
Yeah, I think the do it right part is the tricky bit. But if I can get enough unit tests and enough coverage, both unit tests, integration tests, and all the way up to Selenium, and then hopefully in the future some visual testing and get some AI involved, then I won't feel afraid of my podcast site.
Right.
I want to be able to like commit and walk away, and I want to know, like we always joke about committing to production on Friday afternoons, right?
Yeah.
But arguably, if I have the system set up right, then all my tests would fail and it would never make it to production, right?
That's true. If you do this correctly, then when your tests fail, you know that they're failing for just cause, and you can have them gate your deployments. But a lot of teams are not there yet. Even the ones who have test automation as part of their continuous integration or continuous deployment pipelines, they don't really trust the test because, you know, they're still flaky and sometimes they're failing when they shouldn't have. And so there is a lot that we can do as an industry to strengthen those tests so that we could deploy on a Friday and feel good about it.
Interesting. So do you think that that's a goal? Like that could be like an organizational goal for someone to say, all right, we want to get to the point where y'all can not live in fear, just commit the code and walk away and not be called back into work late Friday, because if you do trust your gates, I mean, it seems like the gates were the key there,
right?
Then everything else will work itself out.
Absolutely, this can be a goal.
Okay, I dig it. So now we need to teach people how to go from, you know, move their way up the testing automation stack, right? They do need unit tests and a framework to start with.
Exactly.
Have you ever instituted visual tests at a place with no testing experience at all? I'm wondering if it's something you have to do in order?
No. So there are some of our customers who they use it almost as like a smoke test kind of thing. So we haven't started with test automation yet, but we're going to write a little simple script that's going to essentially load all of our important pages and then take the screenshots of those and compare them.
Okay. So they have no unit testing. They take a screenshot of what a baseline is, and then they go from there?
Right. So some people are starting their automation journey there. And, you know, they have hopes of eventually maturing and getting to the point where they're going to add unit tests and integration tests and things like this. But yeah, some of our customers use this as a base point.
Do you think that people get, for lack of a better word, paralyzed when faced with the distance between the ideal and where they are currently, and then they just do nothing?
I really do. And I see people try to start and they fail after like a month or two, or realize, wow, there's so much about this that we don't know, that they also get paralyzed and they just don't continue and they put it on the shelf. So hopefully we can address a lot of these issues with test automation U.
Yeah, that analysis paralysis is something that is just overwhelming. When faced with the problem, you just stare at it and you're just like, I don't even
know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, and I don't have time to figure it out.
Well, and isn't that the thing though, right? They don't have time to figure it out, but they do have time to do it manually.
Right, which takes much longer, you know?
and actually, that's a good plug for your previous podcast with me, where we talked about the definition of done, which I think is still valid today. You have to ask yourself, when is this project done? When is this testing done? And without any kind of automation, it's hard to do that.
Right. How do we close this feature out without testing in place for it, right? Mm-hmm. Who's going to regress this stuff?
So I'm looking over at angiejones.tech. You've got a ton of talks up online, a ton of upcoming events and places that you're going to speak. It looks like you've got a bunch of stuff going on. You're pretty busy next year, it looks like.
Yes, I am. Have a bunch of stuff all over, some stuff in Europe and some stuff in the States. So yeah, angiejones.tech, upcoming events. I'm excited. There's definitely a demand for help with test automation, and I'm so glad that I'm able to help the community in this way.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you, Scott.
It's good to talk to you. You can check out testautomationu.com and angiejones.tech. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.